Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, February 11th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, deficit threatens to overwhelm Humboldt County budget. Healthcare workers plan to picket Providence hospitals in Northern California. And two arrested for murder following tactical raid in Ferndale and Rio Del. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Enforcement activity in Humboldt County escalated on Monday morning as the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office deployed its armored Bearcat vehicle to assist another agency in executing out-of-county warrants for two murder suspects. According to HCSO Public Information Officer Meg Ruiz, the tactical vehicle was sent to an address on Price Creek Road in Ferndale and a second location on Pacific Avenue in Rio Del. HCSO confirmed that two suspects were taken into custody during the operation, but declined to name the lead agency handling the case, stating the need to protect an ongoing investigation. Today, booking records from the Humboldt County Jail identified the two men arrested as Wesley Laverne Evans, taken into custody at 11:22 a.m. yesterday by HCSO Deputy Gunnerson. Evans was booked on suspicion of felony murder. He remains in custody. A second individual, Samuel Terry Ashley, arrested at 2:21 p.m. yesterday by Butte County Sheriff's Deputy Whitney, was also booked into the Humboldt County Correctional Facility on felony murder. Ashley's arrest was executed under a Ramey warrant out of Butte County, a type of warrant issued before formal charges are filed, often used in cases where law enforcement believes an immediate arrest is necessary. Authorities in both Humboldt and Butte counties have declined to provide additional details about the case or confirm which homicide the arrests are connected to, reiterating that the information is being withheld to protect the ongoing investigation. This is a developing story, and KMUD News will continue to seek updates on the circumstances surrounding these arrests. Turning to county budget news. Ongoing deficits are forcing Humboldt County to hold the line on spending in its next budget. Daniel Mintz reports.
A status quo budget is being drafted for Humboldt County with no room for the additional funding departments usually rely on to balance their budgets. It's the middle of the fiscal year, and at its February 4th meeting, the Board of Supervisors approved staff recommendations for a lean 2025 to 2026 budget. The current year's budget was approved with a $15 million deficit, but that's been brought down to $10 million due to a mix of savings and one-time revenue increases. But spending of the general fund, which pays for county services, is still surpassing revenues by about $20 million, and salary and benefit increases will pressure the coming year's flatlined budget. One of the approved recommendations is to forgo the customary practice of allowing departments to request additional funding. The coming fiscal year's budget will be approved at the end of June. County Sheriff Billy Hansel said, if it's at the same spending level as the current year's budget, needs that arise will go unaddressed.
When we have a status quo budget and when costs increase, then we're going to have less money. And where that's going to come from right now is because every single department is cut to its core, right? Is that we're going to have to defund our own positions in order to keep things going. And so it's going to be very, very difficult. So I don't want to be put in that situation, especially when we're asking for more public safety from our communities. And so I do want there to still be a process, you know, in this where we can bring in additional general fund requests, supplemental budgets, those kind of things when the need arises, when we do know our budget and or when you all, you know, want us to bring something forward like a problem-oriented policing team, more mobile intervention when it comes to crisis intervention, more vehicle abatement money, all those things that are important to you all. It's important that we're able to bring those to you so you can fund those in the future.
During the staff presentation, Assistant County Administrative Officer Jessica Maciel said, quote, across the board, all sales tax is not performing very well. And the Measure Z Public Safety Sales Tax Fund is expected to fall below what was budgeted. Maciel told supervisors several departments have negative budget balances, which she described as concerning. There was some resistance to not accepting supplemental general fund requests from departments, but County Administrative Officer Alicia Hayes said allowing them would be irresponsible given the threadbare budget scenario.
You know, we've been talking about the 26-27 year for a couple years now, and that continues to be the year where we anticipate some real challenges. And we know that this recommendation not to accept ARGFAs is a difficult one for your board and for departments, but it'd be incredibly irresponsible of me to hand you a checkbook when you don't have money in your checking account. And that's what the data is telling us right now. You're not going to have money in your checking account at the end of next fiscal year based off of a status quo budget as it is. So I just want to put that out there that this recommendation is our office being as fiscally responsible as we can possibly be.
The ability to offset deficits is expected to overwhelm the county in the 2026 to 2027 fiscal year. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell has serious doubt about squelching supplemental budget requests, but she said she'll go along with it to avoid a worse scenario, layoffs.
You know, we knew that this was coming and that it was going to be difficult. I think that, I will know that my department heads will reach out to me if something changes within their department, and I'll have that knowledge. And if they don't know that, I hope they hear that now. It's not a comfortable position to be in. We knew that this was coming. Am I happy? No. Do I want to vote on this? No, I don't. But we don't have the funds, and I don't want to get to a layoff position for people. That's not comfortable either.
With some reluctance, supervisors approved a series of recommendations for the upcoming budget, with Bushnell saying, quote, we're doing this to avoid the layoffs because we value our team members. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Healthcare workers across Northern California will hold a day of action tomorrow, Wednesday, February 12th, picketing Providence hospitals and health centers to protest severe understaffing and major service reductions. More than 2,000 workers, including respiratory therapists, medical technicians, nursing assistants, and hospice nurses, are demanding competitive wages and benefits to prevent further staff shortages and service cuts. The National Union of Healthcare Workers is organizing the pickets across Providence hospitals and hospices in Humboldt, Napa, and Sonoma counties. KMUD News spoke with Matthew Arts, representative of NUHW, that represents approximately 600 healthcare workers at Providence hospitals in Humboldt County alone.
You know, Providence just, you know, it's not doing right by its patients, and it's not doing right by its workers. And what we've seen, especially since COVID, is that Providence has been taking away services, cutting staffing, and making patients wait longer for care. And, you know, workers throughout the system in Northern California really say it has to stop. And, you know, we're fighting for a contract that's going to preserve services and boost staffing. So, you know, Humboldt County and every community, you know, served by Providence can have services that people need and really had for generations. And it's a region-wide action because it's a region-wide problem. But the issues are even more acute in Humboldt County because Providence has such a dominant position here, and it's made the most cuts here.
In Humboldt County, where Providence operates St. Joseph Hospital and Redwood Memorial Hospital, critics, including Kelly Shaner, a telemetry tech at St. Joseph's Hospital in Eureka, say the company is prioritizing profits over patient care. Arch shared some of the union's concerns regarding health care in the county.
I mean, if you look at Humboldt, in 2021, Providence closed the birthing center at Redwood Memorial Hospital. Then they basically divested their outpatient labs, which makes it much harder for people to get lab work and then quickly have a procedure inside a Providence hospital. They just recently closed the acute care rehabilitation center, so people, you know, who are recovering from strokes and surgeries instead of having, you know, really a world-class facility right there in Eureka, now they're being sent to a nursing home that's run by a nursing home company that has had many violations over the years. And, you know, there are even additional cuts. For example, Providence, the medical group, has stopped accepting referrals for routine procedures from providers at practices they don't own. So if your, you know, general practitioner or doctor isn't affiliated with Providence, you can find yourself having to go as far away as Napa or Sonoma to, you know, get a fairly routine procedure from a specialist because Providence isn't going to have their specialist do that work here.
Meanwhile, Providence faces growing scrutiny beyond Northern California. In Oregon, nearly 5,000 nurses are striking over chronic understaffing, and in Washington State, Providence is refunding $21 million in medical bills and erasing $137 million in medical debt after being accused of wrongfully sending low-income patients to collections.
Nurses represented by the Oregon Nurses Association have been on strike for 1 month at multiple hospitals and clinics throughout the state. And the issue there is, you know, very similar to the issue, you know, in Humboldt and in Northern California, which is poor pay that results in severe understaffing and high turnover rates. And Washington State has, you know, basically forced Providence to refund money from patients who should have qualified for charity care, but instead were sent to collections because Providence initiated a program to try to, you know, make people without the resources to pay for care do it anyway. And there was actually a New York Times expose on that a couple of years ago.
Union leaders say Providence must provide fair wages and commit to keeping services open, but the company has so far resisted calls to give 5 months' notice before closing facilities and is only offering annual raises of less than 2%. The cuts, Art says, are not due to a lack of funds.
Providence, at this point, shows about $7.8 billion in financial reserves, and it also has its own venture capital arm, which it just did a round of funding for $150 billion. So Providence is a, you know, it's the fifth largest nonprofit hospital system in the country. It has a lot of resources. And what we see is that they are seeking to, you know, really bolster their bottom line at the expense of local care. And that's especially problematic here in Northern California because Humboldt County and elsewhere, the Providence hospitals are really essential for community care. In Humboldt, even more so because there's really only one other hospital that isn't a Providence hospital. But elsewhere, when it comes to trauma centers, it's the Providence hospital that everybody depends on. So everybody really has a stake in these hospitals being well-staffed and safely staffed.
The National Union of Healthcare Workers representative shared details on tomorrow's picket line, inviting the public to support their local healthcare workers.
In Humboldt County, the picket line will run from 3 to 6 p.m. Outside St. Joseph Eureka, and that members of the community are definitely welcome to come and join workers on the picket line.
In other Providence news, this Friday, February 14th, a major legal battle over reproductive health care will take center stage in Eureka. Supporters are set to rally outside Humboldt County Superior Court before a judge hears arguments on whether to move forward with the state of California's lawsuit against Providence St. Joseph Hospital. At issue, allegations that St. Joseph, the only labor and delivery hospital left in Humboldt County, violated state laws by refusing emergency abortion care to patients experiencing life-threatening complications. One of those patients, Eureka resident Anna Neusluck, will be a featured speaker at the rally. Neusluck says she was denied critical emergency treatment at St. Joseph's Hospital during a traumatic miscarriage last year. Ellie Titus with Humboldt Abortion Access Advocates says the message is clear. Quote, "We are gathering to make our voices heard. Humboldt County families need St. Joseph Hospital to follow state laws and let doctors do their job. The emergency room is no place for Providence to play politics with our lives and health," end quote. The rally begins Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. outside the courthouse at 825 5th Street in Eureka. Supporters are encouraged to bring signs, though extras will be available. At 9:30 a.m., Anna Neusluck will speak about her experience, and at 10:30 a.m., those attending the court hearing will head inside as the judge considers the case. This lawsuit has major implications for pregnant patients in Humboldt County and beyond. KMUD News will continue to cover both the state's lawsuit and the call to action by the NUHW, bringing you more coverage later this week. In national news, KMUD News' Lauren Schmidt got an opportunity to speak to our North Coast representative, Jared Huffman, in this interview.
Good afternoon, Congressman Huffman. I appreciate you taking the time to speak with KMUD News, as these past 3 weeks have been among the most hectic and consequential in recent American history. So to start, I'd like to give you the floor.
Well, you said it, Lauren. It has been a bit overwhelming, certainly for the lay persons out there, that, you know, whoever they voted for in the election, they didn't think they were getting this. I am not terribly surprised because, as you remember, I spent a lot of the summer and fall warning about Project 2025, and so much of what we are seeing, the shock and awe blitzkrieg of executive orders and the hiring freeze and spending freeze and all of these other things are right out of the pages of Project 2025. I guess the twist that, you know, we didn't expect is Elon Musk and this crew of tech bros, you know, running through agency after agency, doing things that they have no clearances or authorizations to do. So it's chaotic and it's worrisome, and I am spending 24/7 dealing with it.
You actually co-founded the Stop Project 2025 Task Force, warning about its goals. Trump had denied ties to it, but we now see Vogt, a key figure in its blueprint, leading the Office of Management and Budget. How much of Project 2025 is already being implemented, and do you think they will attempt to make its full plan come to fruition?
Yeah, well, huge blocks of it are rolling out. You know, in my lane, the Natural Resources Committee, they are already, you know, proposing that we undo monument designations, that we repeal the Antiquities Act, that we, you know, devolve a whole bunch of public lands back to states and local governments, and or just sell them off. So, you know, it's just one of many areas. I mean, they're definitely getting ready to try to eliminate the Department of Education, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. They have tried to bring all of these independent agencies under, you know, direct control of Trump, including the Department of Justice with all their firings. And we now see, you know, DOJ, you know, taking political orders from the top and dropping charges against Eric Adams and doing retribution tours. So, you know, all of this is just exactly the Project 2025 playbook.
Trump's new Department of Government Efficiency, run by billionaire Elon Musk, has already resulted in a federal funding freeze, layoffs, and the shutdown of USAID. What are the consequences of these actions, and how is Congress able to respond?
Yeah, so there's several consequences. There's sort of the immediate, you know, what's going on in these agencies and programs and in the millions of Americans who depend on them in their lives. It's chaos. I mean, payments have stopped. In some cases, employees have been told they no longer have a job. Programs are shutting down. It's complete chaos all over the world, actually, because in some cases we had, you know, clinical drug trials underway in foreign countries that we were funding through, you know, programs that Elon Musk has purported to eliminate. And you know, things like that in Indian country. You know, I have all of these tribes I represent on the North Coast, and whether it's infrastructure or restoration projects or fire resiliency project, controlled burns, vegetation treatment, fuel load reduction, I mean, it's just stopped. And no one knows when the funding will flow again or even if it will. You know, Trump has purported to issue an executive order just basically saying, do not implement the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, all of that stuff. He wants to you know, act like a king and I guess pretend that he can just ignore the law and shut it down. And so all these agencies have stopped. And it is enormously disruptive. We could lose an entire year of, you know, restoration and fire resiliency projects because, you know, you have a window of a few months to do them. And no one knows when we'll get back to work. The other bigger impact is constitutional. When you have a president pretending to have all this authority to override the law, and in some cases just totally disregard what Congress has enacted in its federal funding bills, that is a constitutional crisis. And now you have courts telling the president that, no, you've got to comply with the law, and the president is hinting that he may ignore court orders. So that, too, is a constitutional crisis.
Are you seeing any of your Republican colleagues push back, either in public or in private?
No. No, they're along for the ride here. The pushback is coming from the courts and, you know, to some extent from the public, although, you know, the public reaction to all of this has been mixed. There are people out there who, you know, may not be civically informed, and they think that it's kind of cool that this is, you know, shaking things up. Looks like action. Looks like change. Once the consequences to a lot of these things start to get real for people, it's not going to be popular. But, you know, right now in the short term, Trump and Elon think that they've got the public on their side.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has been very vocal in calling the new government an oligarchy. Do you agree with that characterization?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I was at the inauguration because I'm the ranking member now of the Natural Resources Committee, and there's a traditional lunch with the president and his family and others right afterwards. And I was just shoulder to shoulder with more than a dozen billionaires, the richest people in the world. You know, Tim Cook and the guy from Google and Elon and Bezos and, you know, all of these people in one place just sucking up to Donald Trump. And he loves it and they love it. And I promise you, their agenda is not about working families and rural communities or any of the other folks that I represent.
Given the Republican majority in Congress and Trump's aggressive executive actions, how can Democrats fight back? And do you believe that the party needs to rethink its strategy?
We're trying to constantly rethink strategy because this is a moment where we've got to get it right. The stakes are too high. But here's the thing, Lauren. I know there's tremendous angst out there and fear and worry, and I feel it all too. And I'm trying to get in the arena every day and make a difference and try to push back. But there's no operating manual for what we are experiencing right now. We've never seen anything like it. And so we are, I think, finding our way. I think the leadership in the House Democratic Caucus is really starting to figure out some ways that can be quite effective. But we got to do a better job of letting the public know exactly what we're doing, kind of provide them that reassurance, because people are just so scared right now.
Anything else you would like to leave our listeners with today, Congressman Huffman?
Not necessarily, other than I'm doing everything I can, and I will try to up my communications game as well, because I know people want to hear what's going on, and so I'm going to do more town halls. If you follow my, you know, email list or my social media feeds, it's going to be much, much more active, because we're just going to try to push out a lot of information that I know people want to see.
In other national news, Senate confirms a vote to head OMB as Dems blast him for making Project 2025 into Trump's agenda. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
As government offices go, the Federal Office of Management and Budget has never been very high profile, and the OMB director has rarely been a household name. But nowadays, the Office of Management and Budget has become the spearhead of President Donald Trump's plans to restructure government, fire thousands of federal workers, and dismantle entire agencies. So when Trump's pick to head the office, Russell Vought, came up for confirmation in the Senate, it was a fierce 30-hour partisan debate. Republican John Thune of South Dakota is the Senate Majority Leader.
Mr. President, as director of OMB, Mr. Vogt will have the chance to address two key economic issues: cutting burdensome government regulations and addressing excessive spending.
He says Vogt will lead the charge to cut regulations and government waste. Democrats, on the other hand, had a different view of the nominee.
He is Donald Trump's most dangerous nominee.
Jeff Merkley is a Democrat from Oregon. He says Vogt is not as well known as other Trump nominees, but perhaps he should be.
This man, who is the chief engineer of the Trump train, a train that plans to disregard the law and the Constitution, that is a bigger danger to our republic. And that is why Democrats are taking the floor now and will continue to hold the floor over the every minute allowed under our rules to say this is a mistake.
Trump's pick for budget chief, Russell Vogt, is the only person nominated for the same position he held in the first Trump administration. He's known as a staunch fiscal conservative. He's described himself as a Christian nationalist. And he's also a key author of the controversial presidential transition plan known as Project 2025. Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York led Democrats in a 30-hour marathon of opposition intended to show how Vogt is, in Schumer's words, turning Project 2025 into the White House agenda.
With Vogt, who was one of the chief architects of Project 2025, as head of OMB, all of it, much of it, damaging, dangerous for the American people, will be implemented. And that's why Americans do not want Russell Vogt, the author of 2025, to head such an all-powerful, all-encompassing agency as OMB.
Democrat Patty Murray of Washington says Vogt's game plan is to break the law and then dare the world to stop him.
A post-constitutional time? That's what he believes we're in. Do my colleagues agree with that? Do they think it's time to shred the Constitution? That is what is at stake with this confirmation vote. Because Vogt has made it all too clear that as OMB director, he will put everything on the chopping block, from programs that people rely on to the checks and balances our democracy is founded on.
Democrats continue the debate through the night and into the next day. But when the vote came, Vogt was confirmed in a party line vote of 53-47. So that's done. But that does not mean it's over, at least not according to Murray.
Make no mistake, this fight is not over. As I said before, we still have a lot of work to do right now to make sure all that funding actually does get moving again. This is not like turning on a light switch.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Christopher Martinez, and Lauren Schmidt. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see related stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.